So I have some questions here, but basically, I hope that this can be conversational. So I'd really like to hear about your experience. What's your earliest memory of using a typewriter? How old were you, and what was the experience like? So I would like you to introduce yourself, your name, and before you answer the question.
Sure. My name is Lisa Floating, and I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm 46 years old. My earliest memories of using a typewriter were at home. My parents were landlords, and they would often be typing up their forms for their tenants, rental agreements, and such on our giant Brother typewriter. And it was an electric typewriter, and I remember it. I remember my mom typing very quickly, and my earliest memories are of the hum of that very large machine. It was very imposing. Once I got into high school, that's how I typed my papers. And I was one of the last classes to use IBM Selectric typewriters to learn typewriting in high school. And after that semester, they moved to a computer-based keyboarding instruction. So my earliest memories go back to hearing really sensory details with the typewriter, seeing that it was a practical item, and hearing my brothers type papers when they were in college on it as well. This would have been the, mid-80s. And I remember typewriters being something that you would see in someone's house, like people had them or offices had them. And in my earliest jobs, I remember offices still had the manual large electric typewriter. And that would have been, again, the early 90s.
That's really interesting because when I learned how to type, this was, oh, first of all, I'm an international student from Nigeria, and I learned how to type in secondary school. And it's interesting that I just got to see the electric typewriter only 2 weeks ago during an event we had here in school. So back at home, we had the manual one where you had to put the ink and use your hand to move it, and when you're done with
Absolutely.
class, you're stained with ink all over your body, red and black ink and all that. That was my experience using it. So it's quite interesting that your first experience was using the your mom using the electric typewriter to write. That's
It
really,
was.
yeah. So can you say more about the one you used and your experience using it? How did you learn to use it? Was it through watching your mom, or did you have specific sessions slated for you? And yeah, I would like to know how you used it. What model was it, and what features did it have?
Sure. So the model, I'm just going to see if I can check this out. This would have been, I believe, I believe it was something in the Deluxe 760 variety that my parents had. I remember using that quite a bit to write papers. My senior year of high school, which was the mid 90s, I got a word processor for Christmas. And that was kind of like the hybrid of computer and typewriter. So it was electric. It saved on 3.5 inch floppy disks, which, of course, nobody really uses those or knows of those today. But it had a tiny little screen that was kind of like the early Game Boy color green. And you could see maybe 20 lines of text on there, and you could delete before you would type and or before you would print, I should say. And so that was kind of the best of both worlds for me. So when I went to college, I was using that. But I brought with me a Royal Arrow from 1946 that I found in a Goodwill store. And I was kind of a kooky, artsy teenager. So I had this thing in my dorm room and would sometimes type things on that as well. So I didn't learn to type on a manual typewriter, but I learned to love manual typewriters. That was the first one that I ever had, and I actually still have it to this day. I have a pretty large collection of mid-century modern typewriters, but I'm sure we'll get into that in a little bit. My experience with typewriting now is really hearkening back to what it values about the experience of writing. It values putting things down on the page, not having that perfectionistic streak in erasing, deleting, cutting and pasting, and sort of always nudging it. It just kind of allows you to put things down, and it allows me to generate a lot more text than if I was typing on a computer screen. I find the computer screen somewhat paralyzing.
I find this very revelational, you saying that you prefer to use the typewriter than typing on a computer screen. And since you mentioned it already, I would really like to hear about your collection, how you started collecting it, what fascinated you about the typewriter that made you go, oh, you want to have the manual typewriters, and your interest, basically how it was grown and how you just came about to having this collection.
Sure. So I was an English nerdy kid, and I was really fascinated by writers who use typewriters. So the first typewriter that I got, this was pre-internet. So I was like, well, probably someone wrote high school papers on this, but I can imagine that writers, 35, 40 years ago, again, this would have been the 90s, looking back 35, 40 years from then, it was probably a more standard device. So I had that one typewriter for about maybe 15 years, and as I said, I still have it. I'll tell you what it is used for in a few minutes. And I came across another typewriter in an antique store, and I like to say that that's where when you go from one to two, because you don't really need one. So when you have two, it's kind of like, well, now I guess I'm a collector. And
Exactly.
two, and two kept growing. And my other joke is I like to say that they're kind of like Pokemon, got to catch them all, understand a little bit about their mechanics, where they were made. It's an interesting subculture. And because a lot of the folks who knew them intimately to repair them have passed on, it's really something that, ironically enough, technology has allowed us to keep typewriters alive. And by that I mean, as I started collecting typewriters, and I'm up to like 63 of them now, and
Oh,
I know it's kind of disturbing.
wow.
As I would collect them, to learn how to fix them, I would watch YouTube videos. And really and truly, there's somebody on YouTube that can teach you to do something if you want to learn. And for me, it is delightful old men with GoPro cameras strapped to their foreheads as they repair old typewriters. And I learned a bit about the mechanics by reading about them. And I felt really empowered because if my computer breaks, I'm not fixing that, right? My husband's an IT guy. He might be able to fix it. But if a mechanical object isn't working, there's a reason why that key isn't going down. There's a reason why it's not pressing its ink into the page. So learning to do that really became part of the passion for them. With any kind of collection, you have to decide what it is that you love about them. And for me, I love portable typewriters, and I love that they can be obviously brought to different places and used. So the majority of my collection, save three or four, I think, are all portable typewriters that are from the mid-century, so the 1950s and the 1960s. I like to think of that as the golden age of typewriters. Quite a few American machines, followed by a number of really good German machines, and a few Swedish machines, and a few Italian machines. And they all have slightly different engineering elements. And working at an art school as I do, appreciating the value of design with different typewriters has really been a fascinating discovery since I started working at Maya, appreciating how some of the lines correspond to their place in history and recognizing, for example, like an Art Deco style in the 1920s and 30s versus something that might look a little bit more curvy or a little bit, you know, more brightly colored in the late 50s and 60s. I often compare using typewriters to folks that collect and restore classic automobiles, because it's kind of the same philosophy that this is an object that was well made for its time and is still practical if you can take the time to restore it or, you know, find something that's in good condition.
Wow. I have a big smile on my face just listening to you talk about the typewriters. And what you said about when you buy two, it's really a collection, reminds me of how I started buying vintage wedding dresses. 1950s,
yes.
1930s, old wedding. And I was like, I'll just buy this from Goodwill. But I bought two, three, four. And now there's not even space in my closet anymore. And I'm like, when I move to a bigger space, maybe I'll have a showroom. So it's nice to hear you.
I love that. And again, appreciating that object was so important to someone.
Yes. You know,
the history is part of the object. And, you know, certainly with a wedding dress, you know, there's something very human about it, you know, whether it's, you know,
exactly,
whatever, the shape of the body, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
And I think about, you know, people that would have used these typewriters, and I don't know their stories. Whenever I pick one up, I try and get a little bit of information from the person that is selling it to me or giving it to me. And sometimes all they know is, well, this was my grandfather's, or I once picked up a beautiful typewriter from a woman who was cleaning out her husband's closet. He had passed on. And she said, I never knew all these years that he had one of these. And she's like, I don't know what the story is. And mm-hmm. So that was kind of mysterious. And so, you know, thinking of it as an object that is meaningful for both its historical value and its practical value really makes typewriters something that I enjoy. And I really try to bring that to other people. When I was a high school English teacher, I would have a few in my classroom. And although, you know, they usually would collect the stray four-letter word, because that's funny. a lot of students were fascinated by the mechanics, and I had students that were, you know, tech ed, auto repair folks that were really fascinated by the innards of the machine. And then I had other folks that were writerly types that wanted to write poetry on them. Or I had students that would say, can I, you know, with a short answer type of quiz or something on paper, can I use a typewriter for it? And I was like, no, because again, one typewriter in a room is going to be distracting. If everybody in the room wants to use one, we'll see. But that's where I started putting together creative writing classes with typewriters. And so now I teach creative writing typewriting at the Bindery in Bayview, and 18 to, you know, 23 people show up, and I show up with enough typewriters for the whole group. And wow, we do some creative writing, and it really just frees us from the idea that what you're typing has to be perfect. And there's something really special about taking the words that you put to the page away with you. And that reminds me of one of my favorite moments. Years ago, I had a typewriter in my classroom, and a student came up and pressed a button on it and then went, oh, it prints. And I said, well, yeah, that's really all it does. Because this was a student that had never seen an object create words on the page except for a printer. So thinking of the typewriter as this magical kind of, you know, object really got me to think about it that way too. Like, yes, it prints.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one thing that's going to stick in my mind after this conversation. Like, you're printing directly on the typewriter. Mm-hmm. Really interesting. Yeah, you said something about the practicality of using a typewriter, and I just want to ask, I'm curious how this has influenced your productivity or affected how you work, because I would like to hear a little more about the creative writing class as well. If some of the enthusiasm or values you share concerning the typewriter is also replicated, or you see it in your students as well.
Sure. So the basic idea is that a typewriter is anything but practical today, right? Because as we were talking about before, you have the ink on your fingers. You know, there are occasionally moments where two of the type bars will bunch up and jam together, and you have to take your finger and push them back and maybe get ink on your fingers then. It's a more laborious process to put words on the page. But the reality is that it's actually more efficient, I believe, for creative writing. And so obviously, you know, at work, I'm on a laptop and multiple screens, and I, of course, have computers at home. But if I want to, I say, really write something, if I write poetry and dabble in essays, if I want to really write something, that's where the typewriter comes in. And so it influences me to not have the tabs open, both metaphorically and literally, right? So literally, if I'm writing, I find it very difficult not to check email on the computer. And obviously, on a typewriter, there are no tabs. So you are just with the writing, and you're very present as you're in that process. So in terms of what that's been valuable for, perfectionistic tendencies, it's been extremely helpful for. And giving students the opportunity to see what it looks like to just put words down on a page and recognize that maybe the book that we're reading might have been penned on a typewriter. And writers who pen books today on typewriters obviously have that technology piece come in later, so they use like scanning or, you know, some sort of electronic upload of that document in order to do the heavy revision that happens with writing. But to get your initial ideas down, as Annie Lamott calls the shitty first draft, to get that down on paper, it's very difficult for many people to accept that it's going to be humble, that it's going to be just the start of your ideas. And so I find it as kind of a cure for perfectionism with creative writing. And you know, certainly for many years it was the way that we wrote. But in talking to people who had to write their academic papers on typewriters, many of them say how stressful it was. Because if you made a mistake, you had to go back and, you know, use, you know, the whiteout strips, or, you know, use some kind of, you know, product to make it look right. And so obviously computers have the beauty side down to writing, but I think that the best writing starts really messy, and you can see that on the page.
Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Yes, thank you. I thought you were going to
Oh
complete
no,
your
sorry,
thought.
that was the end of my statement.
No, thank you. Thank you for saying that, because sometimes I definitely do not have a typewriter, but I write in a paper or a book first of all to
Yes.
just have all my thoughts out, then before I start outlining on my laptop. And you're right, as we speak, I have over 100 tabs open on three different parts of my laptop. And so I completely understand what you're saying about having no tabs and just being able to write creatively. And I think it's very rewarding, because people can go back to say, oh, this was my first thought. And maybe it's not
Yes.
even as bad as they think it is. And it's something they would always cherish. Thank you
Absolutely.
so much for sharing that. I'm just curious, have you had any challenges? I want to hear about the storage. Do you have these typewriters in your house? How
I
do you
do.
store them? How do you maintain them?
So it's hard to believe, but they are displayed artfully. There are 12 of them in, we have a library den. So it's, you know, wraparound bookshelves and big comfy chairs. And I have what was originally, it's a mission style. It's actually a stereo holder, which, you know, we don't have one of those anymore. So it's about the perfect size to hold six typewriters. So I have six of them displayed there, and then I have six of them in their cases. And so the really beautiful cases, the typewriters are inside of them in a short pile. So So those live in my house on the main floor. The rest of the collection is actually in a room upstairs that is called the typewriter room, of course, and where I do repairs, and it's where I have it's a kind of beautiful mess up there of just typewriter stuff. And if I need to clean something for someone or refresh a machine, that's where I go with it. And all my tools and all of my cleaning supplies are up there, and I can open a window, which is very important because some of the cleaning supplies can be kind of noxious. But yeah, they're all along the walls in there. It would definitely look horrifying to someone who doesn't know that that's my sideline and my passion. What are all these strange boxes piled up in there?
So
But
interesting.
the reality is that for many years I was bringing them to my classroom, and so I had I think at the most I had a dozen in the classroom. And when I left the K-12 classroom and moved to a smaller office in student services, I do have three here. one is for use, and then the other two are actually displayed on the wall as art, as the case may be.
That is amazing. I don't know if you can, if you would mind sharing pictures. That'd be really good.
Oh,
If you
sure.
have, yes, thank you. I'm
Oh,
actually
happy
itching to see
to.
because the description was very graphic. So I'm like, I need to see what this
You need
looks
to see this, right? You're like, I don't know if I
like.
buy that this looks that artful, but it does. No, I would love to. I definitely have pictures, and I try to rearrange so that I'm using them. I mean, that would be the next logical question, right? Like, why in earthly hell do you have this many typewriters? And I mean, like any collection, it becomes difficult to say no. And when people know that you collect something, they often will seek you out. And
Yes.
typewriters, especially, the kind that come in a case, people want to get those out of their attic, out of their garage, out of their basement. And I usually say no to anything that's like a standard, like a large desktop, those big monster ones. They're lovely. It's not my collecting interest, and they truly do take up a lot of space. But in terms of having all of those, I really do try to use different ones every day. And I try to type every single day, even if it's something really day-to-day kind of quotidian, lists of grocery items, or I might type up, things that I need to say the next time I talk to my doctor, or whatever it might be, on the like everyday aspect of it. I'm in the process of typing up recipes from books and from handwritten notes that I have from relatives, something to put together there. And I decided to do it on a typewriter because that's an easy way to just sit down and work on it. It doesn't feel like I'm doing work. It feels like I'm doing play when I do things on a typewriter. And I try to do some creative writing every day, not always to finish. And that's important to remember as well. It's not always a task that is bounded. Sometimes it's like I've begun something, and I have that piece of paper I can come back to, and I can write on it, and I can continue to type on it if I put it back in the machine. But truly, I do have probably about 25 of them that are just for bringing to events, for QWERTY Fest, for example, to my creative writing workshops. And sometimes people contact me because they would like to buy one, and so I'm like, yeah, I definitely have some that I'm in the process of, not using when I am teaching. So the ones that maybe aren't on the A team, I tend to give those a little bit of attention as sales items.
Okay, that is I don't know, like every response you give, I'm like, wow, really? It's so fascinating, really. Yeah, so in all of this, what challenges have you experienced with your collection, with your which using it, maybe with teaching, in the classroom with it in different spaces? Have there been any challenges or things you wish, oh, maybe you wish this was different in your use of the typewriter?
Sure. I would say the biggest challenge the space in the house for them and justifying their acquisition. My husband is extraordinarily tolerant of this collection, and he is himself a kind of mechanically minded person. So he gets it, maybe not to the tune of, you know, 60 some machines, but he's very tolerant. The other challenge, I think, is just the physical movement of them, and you know, packing 22 typewriters in a Chevy Equinox is not an easy thing to do, because you don't want them sliding around. And, you know, depending on where you're driving, if the road is very bumpy, older machines can get slightly out of alignment. So again, that mechanical object can be, you know, damaged, not necessarily, you know, in a way that makes it difficult to use, but it's a challenge to think about, like, I have to watch out for these machines in there, and then I have to physically move all of them. But I like to say that that's a labor of love, and the hauling them about is not too terrible. The only other challenge that I would have is just not having enough, well, time, because I'm a dabbler. I would love to be able to spend more time with them, but be able to do more in terms of repairs. I would say my knowledge of repairs is confined to American machines. They tend to be pretty easy to get into the guts, and they tend to be pretty straightforward. Once you start moving into things that are designed by Germans, Italians, Swedish, these are beautifully engineered, one might even say over-engineered objects that you really don't want to take anything apart that's Swedish, because I've learned that lesson the hard way. There's ball bearings where you don't expect there to be ball bearings, and then you have ball bearings all over your floor. But as a challenge, you know, it's learning that that hands-on kind of mentality, and not being afraid to take something apart. I think that's something that has been really helpful for me, that if I take something apart, I can learn to put it back together. I can do it in a way that's responsible. I can keep track of it. I often take pictures when I take machines apart of step-by-step what's happening, because though it seems incredibly logical when you're unscrewing something, when you're putting it back, it doesn't always feel that way. So keeping track of things that way. But yeah, those are really the only challenges that I find, and just justifying the acquisition of them, and justifying the ownership. And by that, I mean using them, because I can't think of anything more sad than a working typewriter sitting in a case of a collector that doesn't use it. And to that, I say they should absolutely be out there. Fingers should be on those keys, and ribbons should be inky, and they should be at the ready, because though they are collectible objects, and though they are antiques, they are also still usable. And so letting them, I mean, not to anthropomorphize them too much, but, you know, letting them be of use. And so a challenge for me is justifying that. So that's why I teach the classes. That's why I've given typewriters out to students here at MIAD, where they're fascinated by you know, using printed text from a typewriter in their artwork. And great, let me bring you one, keep it as long as you like, and bring it back. So just being able to access them, I think, is important. Going to type-ins, Bayview Library is a place where I've gone to type-ins, and, you know, various people show up with various machines. And the idea is not for us to use them, but for patrons to come into the room. And usually people hear the click clack and are just fascinated, and they would come in and here, try, use, touch. When I was at Zine Fest, I had five machines there, and people would look over and say, oh, that's really cool. Can we touch them? Yes. I brought lots of paper. Please use them. And just getting people to appreciate that they're very different from what you're used to. But if you're a writerly type, they're really not that different at all. And boy, there's something incredibly cathartic about mashing away on those keys in a way that laptop typing for me has never felt like. And I occasionally go to coffee shops with them and annoy people, which is fun. I mean, it's a mixed bag. You know, sometimes people will come by and be like, are you really using that? and other people will share their own experiences with, oh, you know, my parents had a typewriter like that, or I had a typewriter like that. And, you know, you do get a fair amount of dirty looks, especially if it's a quieter place. But I tend to choose louder coffee shops and, you know, places where the din is welcoming to that sound.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I mean, I remember just I think 2 weeks ago we had a session where we just put typewriters at the entrance of the library, and students came to type. It was amazing, and there were two students that stood out. One of them was so excited. It was like, wow. And we're like, oh, if you type, you even get to compete in this raffle draw. It's like, oh, he doesn't even need the raffle draw. He's just so excited to get his hands on the typewriter and just click clack away. It was quite interesting to see his excitement.
Absolutely.
Yes. So my last question is just building on what you said about teaching students about typewriting. How did your current students, and when you introduce it to every new set of students, how do they receive it? Are there do you think there are specific skill sets that are lacking today that people who use typewriters have mastered, and experience of students who, your own experience as well in these spaces when you teach the typewriting to new students?
Sure. So a couple different ways I could look at that. When I brought typewriters to school, I had the honor of being able to teach creative writing. So it was kind of a natural thing. And being known as kind of the kooky teacher with the typewriters was delightful. And sometimes I would just come around during class when we had work time and students were putting some ideas together, and I'd be like, you want to use a typewriter? And if they were offered, they would be like, yeah, I think I want to try that. But they wouldn't necessarily go and like procure one. That started to grow then, and there were, you know, students that had their favorite machine that they would go and grab at the beginning of class and use. So that was a lot of fun. In terms of skills, I think that, you know, I mentioned before the idea of not having the distractions. I think that having the willingness to go into that flow state of being focused on your writing and stopping, looking over what you've written, you know, not scrolling up, but just looking at the physical page or the pages that you've created so far and continuing that. I think that's a skill that everyone gets better at the more they do it. And so I always think about when I'm writing on the typewriter that it's not like I'm used to, like I have to sort of put on a different persona then and focus on the words that are coming to mind. There's also a physicality of removing the just constant typing, you know, and you have to return the carriage. If you, unless you're, you know, Jack Kerouac and you have a giant ream of, you know, of paper that you just type on like a giant toilet paper roll, you have to stop and put more paper in, you know, so like there is that kind of natural pausing in the process. So that's certainly part of it. And the reality is that when I teach these classes, I have to remember the curse of knowledge, meaning like I know how that machine operates and I know how you have to press the keys to get them to mark the paper. It's a lot harder than, you know, physically more pressure than a laptop. And so I have now started beginning with, you know, just kind of the basic concept of like you are pressing a key, a button, and mechanically a spring, a type bar is, you know, hitting the paper. And so you have to give it enough pressure to do that. If you're a very good touch typist with all 10 of your fingers, you have to be okay with using, for example, just 4 fingers or 2 fingers to start, because it's physically kind of demanding. And so that skill, the physical demanding part of typing, I always remind students that to be an excellent touch typist, there was actually a lot of ergonomic detail involved. Chairs were a certain height, you know, typing stands were a certain height so that you weren't developing carpal tunnel and syndrome, and you were, you know, comfortable with what you were doing on that machine. When you think about how we use laptops today on couches and in beds and, you know, sort of as I'm sitting incredibly terrible posture in this chair right now, being visible, I think about how far we've come from that type of writing. And in some ways, that's very good, right? Like, you can write anywhere with a laptop. You can send it anywhere. You have the immediacy of that. But there's a different kind of immediacy when you use a typewriter. And that immediacy, I think, is much more sensory and much more, I would say, authentic. So, yeah, I would say those are some of the challenges that are just inherent to the object being used for its purpose today, but also just the object being used. Writing is hard. writing is a lot of work. And if you're adding a physical component to it, it can be more challenging. So it's sort of like they say that, you know, boundaries can create a kind of creativity. You know, when you give yourself boundaries, you have to work within those boundaries. And I think of how the typewriter in many ways is a boundary, right? Like it's a physical boundary, and it's a way you have to do this. You really can't lay on the couch type on your typewriter. You have to be sitting somewhere on a hard surface. You have to have the angle of your hands such that, you know, the slope of the keys isn't going to make your hand cramp up. So once you sort of accommodate those physical needs, it can create a real authenticity and a real immediacy with writing that I think I've lost the ability to do that on a computer screen. It feels like I'm writing a paper for a class, or it feels mm-hmm. like I'm doing something like an email, you know, which these are all important forms of communication and important types of writing. But if I want to put something down that I want to come back to and read and feel something, it has to be the right environment. And for me, that's a typewriter.
That is so amazing. And as you were speaking, I was thinking about how the typewriter forces one to be disciplined in ways that the laptop and computers today do not.
Beautifully put. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes, that's wonderful. Yeah, so I'm just curious, what's the oldest model and what year? I don't know if you remember everything for all the typewriters in your collection. What year is the oldest model of your?
Sure, my oldest. I'm sorry about that. As random emails come in. My oldest is a 1938 Royal Standard, and that is the same machine, not literally the same machine, but the same model that William Faulkner wrote The Sound and the Fury on. And I have a collection of typewriters that I sought out the model because of the writer who used it. So I have a Hermes 3000 and a Silent Super by Smith Corona. Those are both machines, and a Lettera 22, now that I think about it. Those are all machines that at some point in her writing career, Sylvia Plath used. And so just, you know, having those machines be a reminder of the writer that would have used them and put their ideas to paper. But yeah, 1938 Royal Standard with a matching advertisement from I believe it was a Life magazine. It's the original ad, and it is to our eyes today just horrifically you know, kind of retrograde, because it's like, oh, every girl wants one of these. So I have that framed above the machine in my library. I'll take a picture of that and send it to you too.
Thank you. Can see it. Yes. That is so amazing. I'm reading a book, a biography of Sylvia Plath, and it's so interesting that the author actually talked about her use of the typewriter.
Yes, absolutely. Was it Red Comet? Is that the one?
Yes.
Yep. It's brilliant. I'm in the process right now of reading the letters that were just published in the last couple of years. It's two volumes. Each volume is something like 1,000 pages. And so I can't just read the letters. I have to have the letters out and the Red Comet biography and also the journals and a copy of the poetry, because I find myself reading a letter and then being like, you know what, actually, I know a little bit more about this, and then going to one of the other books. It's a really delightful, immersive little process for no one other than myself. I just look kind of crazy with, you know, five books open every once in a while. It's not an everyday thing. Yeah, dig into the letters.
Yeah, that's amazing. And maybe I'm just going to do what you're doing too. I mean,
it.
during the summer break, maybe I will. And that book actually is, I don't know, I feel like it's the best sophistic work I've read. 'Cause even before I'd never heard about Sylvia Plath before then, but I saw that book, I'm like, who is this person? And I read it from the very first page, the author's note and all of that. Amazing work, really. So it's nice to hear that you have a similar typewriter to what she used at the time. Thank you.
You're
Thank you
so
so
welcome.
much, Miss Lisa Floden. I am grateful for your time. I appreciate your efforts and thank you for keeping to time. I wasn't sure if you were going to come because you didn't accept, but I'm like, let me just join and wait and see if you'll show up and
Oh, sure. I'm so used to Google Meet that I was like, oh, it's Teams. That's just super easy. So I forgot to, right? Actually, I didn't realize that I needed to click on anything. But yeah, and then I had a student in here in my office, and I was like, I have to go. I have an interview. And they were like, an interview for what? And I said, I'm being interviewed about the typewriters. So they were like, okay, I'll leave you to that. So no, absolutely. And if you have any follow-up questions, please feel free to reach out via email. And I think my text is on, my email's on the email. My cell phone number's on there. Feel free to text me as well.
Yes, I will. Thank you. And if I need to send the release form to you for publication on our website, I'll definitely email that to you as well. I hope it's fine.
Absolutely. That would be just fine. You bet. I'll send it back to you.
All
Sorry.
right. Thank you. Thank
You're
you
so
so much
welcome.
for your
You're
time.
so welcome. Good luck
I
with your
look forward to
project.
getting the pictures from
Yes,
you.
absolutely. I'll get those to you later this evening.
Yes, or whenever you get the chance. No hurries at all. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Take care.
You too, ma'am. Have a wonderful night. Rest.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right.